So it all started with a YouTube channel for dispatching specifically. It's one of those things where, like, I don't get your job, you don't get my job, we're not wearing each other's shoes, that we have to give each other a little more grace for on both ends of the radio. I wanted to give people more information so we could get them through that hump in the process and give them more of an opportunity to enter the actual training that these departments are doing with their applicants. When you're waiting on 911 and you're in the middle of an emergency, no one's answering, there's a reason for that. I think it's important to be proactive in our self-care in this line of work, because it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience, along with Dr. Stacey Raymond and Bonnie Romilly, LCSW, EMT. I'm David Dashinger. In this episode, we'll be speaking with Ashley Valenzuela, the RASPE dispatcher. She founded the RASPE Dispatcher LLC, and we'll be speaking about 911 telecommunications, her podcast, and awareness and recruitment and retention to attract more dispatchers and keep more dispatchers in the profession. We invite you to like and subscribe, YouTube, Responder Resilience, Facebook, Responder Wellness, Inc., and Responder TV, bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and go to our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. We'll be right back to speak with Ashley after this.
In this family, more of us die by our own hands than by the hazards of the job.
In this family, up to a quarter of 911 telecommunicators have symptoms of post-traumatic stress.
In this family, our mental health and wellness are in crisis,
while responders are quietly suffering.
In this family, many struggle with job-related stress,
burnout, trauma, sleep disruptions, substance abuse,
and relationship problems.
In this family, we can help the helpers.
With vital information and resources,
resilience strategies,
and success stories of overcoming the obstacles.
In this family, no one is alone.
Welcome to Respond to Resilience with co-hosts retired Lieutenant David Dashinger, Dr. Stacey Raymond, and Bonnie Romilly, LCSW, EMTB.
And we'd like to welcome Ashley Valenzuela. She's been a 911 dispatcher since 2018. After experiencing the lack of information available to folks interested in the career, she created the RASPE Dispatcher, an online resource for current and aspiring dispatchers. And she's also the host of Let's Talk Dispatch podcast. Ashley, welcome to Respond to Resilience.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to meet the face behind all the great content on social media.
It's really a blast to, you know, create all that content. And it allows me to meet folks like you who are pushing the same kind of message. So, you know, I'm really thankful for you guys inviting me on.
So, Ashley, you don't know this, but my dad finished his police career as a dispatcher, and he worked midnights, and that was very challenging. It was a very challenging job to be a midnight dispatcher. So what we'd like to know is, how did you get into dispatching?
Oh, just stumbled forward. You know, I went to school for criminal justice. I got my undergraduate and graduate degrees in that study. I always thought I was going to go patrol. And I spent a lot of time after college coaching basketball and working in social work. I was actually trying really hard to spend my life in sweats. And then eventually, you know, I wanted to make more money. I wanted a little more stability. So I started applying to a bunch of different options, and the Sacramento Police Department Dispatch Center was the one that landed first. So I kind of dove head first into that experience, and, you know, it was a life changer for me.
Can you talk more about that? What was it like working for such a large agency?
You know, it was eye-opening. It was probably, I believe, the best experience for a entry-level dispatcher being at such a large agency, because we got a full academy experience. We went through an 8-week academy in classroom. We spent 1 week, they called it Hot Week, where they exposed us to the floor so we didn't run away crying our first week of on-the-floor training, and then ended back in the classroom. So I think that benefit of being able to kind of slow roll that rather than having to dive right in the way a lot of agencies have to do just because of the way staffing is set up was super beneficial to me being able to know how to deal with high stress calls. And of course, the environment that I was working in, we did have more exposure to violent calls, shootings, things like that you don't necessarily see in smaller suburban type agencies that I'm currently at now.
And so I'm curious, because we're starting to see there some resources and even like rooms being built into facilities like 911 centers for dispatchers or police officers to go and kind of chill out and regroup after, you know, after a shift or after a call or on a break. How do you deal with difficult calls or, you know, a kind of a grinding shift and coming back the next day, you know, kind of with renewed inspiration and love for the job? Like, what's your philosophy on that?
Yeah, I definitely feel like it's important. And I know dispatchers, we have an issue doing this. We don't do very well at leaving the floor when it is our time to take our breaks, when we do have that option. Sometimes we don't have a lot of space to get off the floor. Mm. If you're working at a smaller agency, you know, a two-seat department where they're on radio, I'm on phones. And if I do leave, I'm leaving my partner to man both of those positions. So there's a little guilt that kind of gets into that. Not anyone's fault, not anyone's doing. It's just kind of our natural wanting to, you know, take the load and not give it to someone else. So when you are in a center that you have at least three people, you know, making sure to get off the floor, actually leave the room where all those triggers are that you don't even realize are triggers, you know, hearing the phone ring, hearing people escalating in conversation, hearing radio traffic, you know, actually leave that room, get some fresh air, exit that space. Mm-hmm. So you can actually allow your body to decompress and not be on high alert.
So I think, you know, we're all aware that 911, is having a staffing crisis nationwide. Mm-hmm. And there is an urgency to bring more 911 dispatchers, you know, to have that job. Mm-hmm. Why, what made you start the RASB dispatcher?
Yeah, so, you know, shout out to Sacramento Police Department. I had a wonderful experience through the comm center, through my academy. And I, of course, have my education in criminal justice. You know, spent 4, 5, 6 years studying law enforcement. And then I come into this role for a department and I go through this 8-week academy where we're learning all these things about dispatch. And then I go do the job. And I was really upset, quite frankly, that we never talked about this in my education, in my higher education. You know, higher ed and criminal justice trains you to be patrol. They don't train you to be in dispatch. And I felt that was a really big disservice because of the staffing crisis, as well as people's lives change, but their hearts don't. So for many reasons, people, you know, don't go on to be an officer. They get injured in academy. They go out and do it. And they're like, this isn't actually what I thought it would be or want to do. And there are other options. And it's not a second choice. It's just another choice. Mm-hmm. And we don't talk about that enough. And we should. And that's kind of how the RASB dispatcher was born.
And to survive the career with a sense of longevity, that you don't crawl across the finish line, that you sprint across, you got to know what you stand for.
Knowing that we have additional stressors, that means we have to take on the responsibility of making ourselves more resilient.
And on game day, we must succeed as a team. When one of us succeeds, we all succeed.
Most superhero origin stories, they're all stories of post-traumatic growth. You're like the Hulk that's been exposed to gamma radiation, and now you have this super ability because of that trauma you've experienced.
Before you became a firefighter, paramedic, and EMT, whatever it is, you were a human. You started off as a human. That human's got to be taken care of, and then we can take care of other people.
It's also interesting how in some places the dispatch center is completely separate from where all the first responders are. Mm-hmm. And then for some departments, the police department does policing and all of the dispatching, right? So to your point, why isn't education preparing people for some of the things that are going to happen in the real world? So I know we commend you for seeing a gap and starting something where there was one, because I think we feel the same way in our world, which is why we do the podcast here. But could you talk a little bit more? So it's a wonderful idea. What are some of the services that you provide through the RASB dispatcher? What resources do you have on your website?
Yeah, so it all started with a YouTube channel for dispatching specifically. We have a very similar process to police officers. We go through, you know, backgrounds, we go through polygraph, we go through psychological exams, medical exams, the whole thing. So it's an extensive process. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't go to school for law enforcement, if you didn't grow up in a first responder family, that process is very unfamiliar, and there's a lack of understanding for just how long that process takes. So initially, that YouTube channel I created, the RASB Dispatcher, was with videos explaining that, mm-hmm. you know, helping adults have more information so we can decrease our anxiety as they're entering this process and kind of have a place where people can ask questions and get answers from someone who's been through it, is still in it. And, you know, within my scope of practice always, but where they can have a little bit of a sounding board. And from that, I started creating videos to help people practice for the exam dispatchers have to pass in order to move on to the interview. No one likes tests. It is, especially as adults, let alone when we were kids. So these videos were very simple. Very much just to give people familiarity with the skills and the way we are typically test to get through that process. Because unfortunately, the testing portion is oftentimes pass fail, even though it's not necessarily reflective of how you actually do the job. So with our vacancy rates being so high, with this test being pass-fail, with people's anxiety being up with tests in general, I wanted to give people more information so we could get them through that hump in the process and give them more of an opportunity to enter the actual training that these departments are doing with their applicants.
You bring up some interesting points because, you know, sometimes we live in our own little world, if whether in fire, police, EMS, but we don't really know that much about the other professions like 911 telecommunications. So, you know, if someone's coming to you and they want to prepare for the test, what exactly is on these tests? Like, what do they need to know? And what are some of the difficult questions or processes that people have to encounter in order to get through that and get the job?
Yeah, so critical is kind of the big one that most people use. But if you are not taking the critical test, you're taking some tests very similar in regards to testing the same skills, even though it's under a different name. Obviously, typing is big, usually somewhere around the realm of 35 to 45 words per minute as a base is usually what's accepted in the application portion of the process. When you get into critical, it is, I believe, 12 sections of different things that are worked into the test and tested throughout the test entirely. So you want to work through the test as quickly as possible, being as accurate as possible. But you're going to be doing things like data entry, multitasking, where you're entering that data and then making a decision about who to dispatch based on certain rules. There's going to be basic map reading, as well as scenarios, you know, listening and inputting data. So a lot of that multitasking is going to be being tested throughout the test entirely. Call summarization, things of that nature.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
Is there a section on mental health or how to handle de-escalation tactics with callers?
No, for the critical, it's seeing if you have the basic skills to operate the technology, I think is the best way to explain critical, just to make sure that you're able to type, read a map, multitask, and then through the academy, through the department's training process, you should be getting those skills.
Okay. Could you just say a few things about what the public doesn't understand about dispatching, the job of dispatching? Like, what are some of the myths that people seem to project onto you? And what would you like the public to know? And even other first responders and other branches to know?
Yeah, you know, my units cannot teleport. They are good, but they're not that good. I think I've learned, especially doing this job, that we live in a society where we expect instant results. And when the response time for a nonviolent crime, a not in progress crime, is more than 5-10 minutes, there's a impatience that comes into play. And the reality is, my job as a dispatcher is to send the call. The call sitting there on my board is giving me as much anxiety as it's giving you waiting to hear from the person. So if the officers aren't being sent, or if the response is not as quickly as you believe it to, it's because they're busy. Simply, is they're on other calls. You know, there are some days where my units are going call to call to call. And what people don't understand, the luxury of being in dispatch and not being out in the field, is, you know, they're not having time to snack. They're not having time to eat their meals, their bathroom breaks. Like, what's that? You know? So, you know, having that understanding that their well-being, their self-care does go on the back burner a little bit, especially on a busy day. Mm-hmm. But our main focus is to get to you as quickly as we possibly can. And that for 911 and dispatch specifically, I'm looking to partner with my caller. You know, the questions don't slow down the process. Your ability to answer the questions helps improve the process. Mm-hmm. So the other side of the RASB dispatcher is reaching the everyday citizen, you know, is exposing the everyday citizen to the realities of our job, making them aware that there is a staffing crisis. So when you're waiting on 911 and you're in the middle of an emergency, no one's answering, there's a reason for that. And it's not because we don't want to answer. It's because we don't have enough bodies in some of these centers to answer all these incoming crises. And of course, when it's appropriate to call 911, and non-emergency numbers do exist. So if you're listening, look up your local department's non-emergency number, put it in your phone for when you need it, because that's really helpful, keeping those 911 lines open for folks who really need it.
Okay. Another thing I'd love you to speak on, which is probably will educate the public as well as some first responders, and that's when people call on their cell phones and how that shows up, you know, in your world, and how do you locate, you know, where the emergency is versus where someone's calling from or what cell phone tower it's pinging. How do you sort through all that?
Yeah, you know, the proper language and the proper words for it, I probably don't have. But basically, we can't see where you're at all the time. Uber's location services are probably a little better than 911. Unfortunately, that's just kind of the reality, is we're behind the curve a little bit when it comes to technology. It is getting better, but depending on what kind of cell phone you're calling from, what kind of service, what tower you hit, will determine how much information comes through to us, as well as what tower you hit. If you're on the freeway, you might hit CHP, you might hit my department that's bordering that freeway. So really knowing your location is very important. It's because I don't know it, and I could guess maybe if the meters are good, which we don't want to guess on. When you need help, we want 100% accuracy. So when we're asking you what is your location, it's because we want to make sure we got the right location and that we're sending the help there to the right spot without any delay.
Responder Resilience is your place for insightful discussions for emergency services professionals, including law enforcement, EMS, fire service, 911 telecommunicators, animal control, rescue squads, K-9 officers, corrections, trauma-informed therapists, and agency leaders. We bring you leading experts and influencers in emergency services, sharing knowledge and tools to improve the culture of wellness and to inspire excellence in leadership. Tune in live every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for the weekly premiere on YouTube and Facebook. Or stream episodes anytime on ResponderTV.com or on your favorite podcast platform. Stay current with hot topics, informative content, and get valuable insights on how to lead a healthier life both on and off the job by subscribing to us on YouTube and Facebook. Responder Resilience is committed to our family of public safety professionals. Remember to like and subscribe today.
So putting my EMT hat on, because I've been an EMT for a long time, I definitely think dispatchers are misunderstood, forgotten, and taken for granted. Mm-hmm. And I had a day, this podcast obviously has been very enlightening to me as a mental health person, but mm-hmm. in my career, I had a day where it just hit me mm-hmm. how you all have all the same feelings that we do. And I just hadn't thought of it the same way. We had a fire at a horse barn one day when I was on duty. So we went, luckily everything was okay. But while I was still on scene and we were starting to clear up, the dispatcher called my unit number on the radio and said, can you give me a landline? So I go back in the car, give a landline. And the dispatcher said, please tell me the horses are alive, please. Because they couldn't tell from all of the radio traffic. We typically don't come on the radio and say the patient's alive or the horses are alive, right? Mm-hmm. So when I answered and said, yes, they're okay, I heard the sigh of relief. I heard the thank God. Thank you for calling me. Thank you for telling me. And when I hung up that phone, I really realized they have all of the same emotions that we do. They're going through the highs and lows like we do. And I would surmise that you're conjuring up the visual of all of these things. Yes, we see it, but we all know that our mind, if lended to itself, it will go to the darkest places. And so after that day, I realized and I felt like I tried to give closure because that's something that we get a little bit more of than you all.
It is really true. One thing that I think is different between patrol or folks responding in person and dispatch is the level or the amount of calls that we take versus you go to. And it's not your trauma is bigger than mine or my trauma is bigger than you. It's just different realities of the job. You know, you go to a high priority call, and you'll be working that call for half your shift, if not the entire shift, depending on what it is, where I send you to that call and I'm in another one. I'm in another one, especially these larger agencies. You know, I can go from, you know, a domestic violence call, hang up, to a cat in a tree. And like, I didn't even know we transfer those, and then to a shooting. And that's just kind of the ebb and flow of a dispatch center, especially in these high impacted centers. And that's just a reality that it's one of those things where, like, I don't get your job, you don't get my job, we're not wearing each other's shoes, that we have to give each other a little more grace for on both ends of the radio. We're all dealing with helping people. And with that comes taking on some baggage that affects all of us differently.
Absolutely. And so to that effect, do you have a toolbox of things you use to help you kind of, you know, come back to reality or to get grounded and centered after a tough call or a tough shift? What do you do to kind of keep your, you know, keep yourself balanced and still sane doing this job?
Well, obviously I do the raspy dispatcher stuff. For me, like having that outlet, sharing my experience, helping other people get into this role, does help me decompress from what I do on a daily basis at my 9 to 5 not really a 9-to-5, my 12-hour job. But also keeping a routine really helps, especially with shift work. I do work graveyard. So, you know, on my work days, I go to work an hour or so early just to work out and keep some kind of routine that happens on my days off too. I think a lot of times we can get kind of caught in just getting up and going because of the weirdness and that lives in shift work. But I think keeping those routines helps to make sure that I'm strong enough to deal with the days that are harder than others.
So Ashley, can you talk about Unpacking the Process monthly webinar?
Yeah. So Unpacking the Process monthly webinar is kind of my answer to folks who want to have a little more of a one-on-one virtual experience with their questions and their understanding the process. So it's an hour session where I basically give a 30-minute presentation about dispatching. You know, I play some cool calls that dispatchers really shine in, as well as some real life situations that dispatchers deal with, break down the application process, go through that whole spill, and then allow 30 minutes of questions from the folks who are participating. And that's kind of, I think, the most important part of the process, is because everybody has their own questions, has their own experiences, wondering if this thing in their past is going to affect XYZ. And of course, I don't have all of those answers. I'm not the department they're going to be hiring, but I can give people some feedback, some knowledge, some reassurance that they understand we're human and we've all, you know, dabbled in things that people dabble in when they're young and dumb. So just having that sounding board and a place for people who are really considering this job to come learn and ask questions.
To that point, do you have any specific advice for people bringing something from their past to this line of work?
You know, you just have to, you have to own it. You know, we the ability for the background to find out that you didn't own it is high. You know, so there's no point in lying about something that is documented, can be discovered, can be found out and kick you out of the process when it actually wasn't even a big deal. The big deal was you omitted it. You didn't put it out there. You didn't own it. So the idea that, you know, the idea is you need to answer direct questions with direct answers. And that's, you know, people get caught up in the gray area of things, you know, and why you just need to answer the question. You know, if they ask you what color is the sky, you say blue and you leave it at that. Don't get too caught up in all that gray area. Don't lie. Don't omit. Just answer the questions.
Well, I know that, like some of us, you are active getting out there to conferences and, education and training. So I'm curious, what are you seeing out there that you find to be kind of inspiring or exciting in the industry, some of the changes or some of the new information and resources out there? What are some of the things that you're seeing that are trending in a positive way for the profession?
I love our tech. You know, I love the tech that's coming on to the forefront in the dispatch centers specifically. And I know for dispatchers, like, change is scary, and for people in general, change is scary. But there is so much assistive technology that just kind of helps folks do their job easier. And, you know, there's transcription that's coming across the screens now. So your caller is talking, and then you're getting a transcription on your screen as well. So when you're like, what did they say? I think they said this. You're getting that reassurance, like, okay, I did hear that. So your brain's working a little less hard to compute all the multitasking that you're doing. There's language stuff coming through, making it easier to talk to folks where English isn't their primary language, which, as we all know, when you're dealing with a life or death emergency, getting the information as quickly as possible. Second, saves lives. So when it comes to a language barrier. Anything that can decrease that is really helpful. Of course, the mapping is always improving. We're always getting more tech to help us locate folks who don't know where they are, who can't figure that out. So that's wonderful. I really enjoy texting 911. If you don't know, a lot of places do have the ability to receive text messages for the deaf of hard of hearing communities. Like, this is super helpful. If you text 911, literally like you're texting a friend, just put 911 in the to message and it'll send to us. If you don't have text to 911 in that area and you didn't look it up beforehand, you'll get a bounce back message telling you, hey, this doesn't work here, call 911. So all these different ways for people to communicate emergencies in their comfort zone, in their language, and their ability to communicate is exciting for me.
Cool stuff.
When you retire, you're just another employee that's gone. In 10 years, you'll be, oh yeah, that's good old what's-his-name.
And sometimes I think for a lot of us, it's scary to retire when you've been raised by an organization for almost three decades.
There's a running joke that says that as you retire, you're forgotten about before you even meet the parking lot.
It wasn't that I was losing the passion for the job. I decided I want to go ahead and transition and start traveling and talking to groups of people.
I lost who I was. I didn't have any plans for the future. I sunk.
And we're always saving for a rainy day. And what ends up happening is you die and you never receive the benefit of you working so hard for so long.
It's as if you've lost a loved one. For me, there's a sadness there.
They really do become your second family.
I was a firefighter. That was always what I wanted to do. Sometimes life throws you a curveball and you find yourself without an identity.
I would pass police cars and it was like somebody punched me in the stomach. Like, I got sick because I missed it so bad.
When you say I'm a retired firefighter, people, they notice. And they're like, wow, man, that's incredible. And it provides an avenue for you to be impactful.
So Ashley, can you tell us more about your podcast, Let's Talk Dispatch?
Yeah, Let's Talk Dispatch was kind of born from my YouTube channel, as all things seem to be with the Raspy Dispatcher. One day I just kind of was like, you know, I should probably talk to other people about their experience, their knowledge. You know, I'm still pretty young in dispatch years. You know, I've only been doing this since 2018. So I knew there were folks out there with, you know, more knowledge, more information, experiences to share that I believe the folks tuning in to my platform would benefit from. So it started with just video recordings like we're doing now, just straight for the YouTube channel. And then I was talking with one of my good friends, Ryan Deadman with the 911 Training Institute. And they're just like, why don't you just do a podcast as well? You already have the audio because you're doing it. So just do a podcast too. And I was like, you're right. So we turned that segment from the YouTube channel into a podcast as well. And I've been doing that for about a year and a half now, and it's been going really, really well.
So just to go back with that mental health piece a little bit, because that's something we like to really talk about.
Yeah.
What are some of the take homes that you think our viewers or listeners should really understand in terms of mental health with dispatch, and where do you think we need to go?
I think some of the big things in that folks, you know, who work in, you know, mental health that come on my podcast, the biggest thing is you should get a therapist day one in this line of work. I think therapy is wonderful. We want to work at the baggage before it gets too full, you know. I know that a lot of our agencies, and we have, you know, peer support, we have reactive mental health services, big incident debrief, big incident therapy session, you know. But I think it's important to be proactive in our self-care in this line of work, because it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. We're not all going to avoid some type of trauma exposure, some type of trigger, mm-hmm. taking these many traumatic calls a day for the line of work we do. So just having a plan, doing the work before it becomes a big problem or big issue, I think is most important for dispatch and really any first responder in general.
Thanks.
Good to know. And it's so interesting to do a podcast because you get to meet so many people and hear their expertise and wisdom, you know, in areas that we wouldn't ordinarily necessarily get exposed to. So I think it gives us like kind of an interesting perspective on what's out there and what's being done in our professions. And so salute you for doing that, especially for the 911 telecommunicators, because that's such a, in a way that's, you know, a profession that needs it, right? It needs as much help and support. They all do, but I think 911 is one that is underserved with some of these resources. Mm-hmm. So thank you for doing what you do.
Awesome. Thank you.
Before we wrap up, I just wanted to ask, if you meet somebody, let's say in a, they're asking you, Ashley, you know, kind of interested in becoming a dispatcher, what would I be a good candidate? Like, you know, what do I need to be? Who do I need to be? What skill set do I need? What kind of personality should I have? How do you kind of tell them what the job is like and whether it's a good fit for them?
Yeah. One of the things I love about dispatching for folks who are on the job market is A, it's entry level. You don't need any previous dispatching experience in order to be a candidate or to be successful mm-hmm. in this role. You don't need any higher education. So it is a good sounding board, a good platform for folks who are, you know, maybe not on the school vibe and just want to get out there and get into a good city job, county job, state job, you know, helping people. So it's definitely a job that you don't need any experience to do. The best experience on your resume, I believe, is customer service, which we all have done in some way, shape, or form, because that's really what we're providing at the bare minimum is customer service. You're talking to people on the phone, you're navigating them to the resources they need, or you're sending the resources to them. Of course, any de-escalation tactics that you have experience to is helpful, mm-hmm. but you're not going to be a dispatcher sitting in your interview. They're going to train you to be it. You know, you're going to get all this information, all this knowledge, all these tools in your tool belt when you go through that training. Mm-hmm. So I think the best bare minimum experience is having customer service on your resume and being able to talk to people.
Do you have any events coming up, any projects you want to share about, any new training, anything like that?
Oh, you know, we're trying to hit as many conferences as we're able to. You know, we have all of our resources at theraspydispatcher.com. And as you guys mentioned, you know, checking out the podcast, we do have two ways to get involved with that. You can be a guest by signing up, date and time that works for you online, mm-hmm. or you could submit a story. And that can be as anonymous as you'd like it to be, but lots of ways to get involved in touch. We also have a private Facebook group, which is growing steadily, which I'm really proud of. Also titled Let's Talk Dispatch. What I enjoy about that Facebook group is it is for current, former, and aspiring dispatchers. So even if you're someone who doesn't have any experience, you can join this group, ask people questions. You know, you can do it anonymously in there as well, and get feedback from dispatchers, current and former, who are positive and are wanting to give folks feedback who are looking to get into this line of work.
It has been an absolute pleasure to connect with you and have you on this podcast and talk about what you do. And especially because, like I say, we don't get to see inside your world that often. And it's so important to all the emergency services. Mm-hmm. So many thanks for all that you're doing for 911 telecommunicators, and continued success with the podcast and all your other projects.
Awesome. Thank you again so much for having me. I love the work you folks are doing. It's needed. We have to continue to have these conversations. So thank you for including me.
Thanks for your time. Keep up the great work.
Awesome.
Thank you, Ashley.
Thank you.
Remember to like and subscribe on our YouTube channel, Responder Resilience. We're on Facebook, Responder TV, and Responder Wellness, Inc. We're on bbsradio.com, all the podcast platforms, and go to our website, respondertv.com, for past episodes and guest information. Till the next time, stay safe, be kind to yourself. Take care.